You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. When audiences first heard the trumpet fanfare of John Williams' theme for Star Wars, it was 1977, and it was a jolt of pure movie magic. And all these years later, the magic is still there. Star Wars still holds a Darth Vader-like grip on our imagination. The Detroit Institute of Arts is tapping into that magic with its newest exhibit. Star Wars and the Power of Costume runs now through September 30th at the DIA. With us now is Elliot Wilhelm, curator of the exhibition, also the film curator of the Detroit Film Theater at the DIA. Elliot, good to have you with us.
It's great to be with you, Cynthia.
And Elliot, you've been quoted as saying that this is a timeless exhibition. Why so?
Well, it has to do not just with Star Wars, but with the power of cinema. Making a movie is just one of those unimaginable tasks. It takes hundreds of people all working in coordination on different aspects of creating what ultimately turns out to be a singular vision. And we go and we spend our 90 minutes or 2 hours watching it. And we don't really question how it happened. It's just kind of by magic. We know there's a director someplace. But there are so many different craftspeople, so many different artists who have ideas and also add their vision to a production. We have, along with the Smithsonian Institutions Traveling Exhibitions and with the Lucas Museum of Narrative Art, been able to mount an exhibition on one aspect of filmmaking, one that people don't always pay attention to other than perhaps subliminally, and that is costume. So it could be an exhibition about costumes for any film, any classic film that people have grown to know and love, but there's something spectacular about the various costumes in Star Wars, which becomes apparent the instant you walk into the exhibition or the instant you look at any one of the films.
Give us an idea of some of the costumes. I know you've got over 60 original costumes from those first seven Star Wars films. Give us an idea of some of the ones that are just going to really hit people.
Well, there's what we are now referring to as an unofficial selfie station, which is a spot where people are so knocked out by the two costumes next to each other, one of them being the original Chewbacca. He's an imposing figure. He's a very tall fellow, and he's covered in yak hair, and he's just splendid. And standing next to him is Han Solo. And we see Han Solo's vest and his gun belt, which contains a blaster. Next to that is an image from High Noon with Gary Cooper. And you might say, what's this doing here? But we're making connections between the characters that people have come to know and love. Even if they weren't science fiction fans, they understood the role in this adventure that a sort of roguish person like Han Solo and his sidekick, Chewbacca, were playing. We've seen it before. We've seen it in Westerns, and we've seen it in other kinds of adventure films. And yet, when you walk into the gallery of droids that's part of the exhibition, when we look at R2-D2, a lot of folks might not consider him or think of him as a costume. And yet, there was a small person, an actor by the name of Kenny Baker, mm-hmm. who was inside of R2-D2, who helped him sort of scuttle along in scenes when that was necessary. And being in a room with the original R2-D2, which this one is, and seeing the original concept drawings to see the evolution of this character, what it was once conceived would be a perfect little droid to have in the film, and how he evolved and why he evolved because of technological issues. It's fascinating for anyone who is either into Star Wars or is simply wanting to know about how these movies get made, how any movie gets made.
Appreciating good design and then realizing what this series of films did to push the envelope for movie making, and what we see today wouldn't have happened had George Lucas not pushed that envelope back in 77 and beyond.
Absolutely true. I mean, he was always fascinated by science fiction films and fantasy films, and among his favorites, for example, he lists it now as his number one favorite film, was a 1927 German silent film by the director Fritz Lang called Metropolis, mm-hmm. which was a huge epic science fiction movie about the division between the sort of imperialist classes and the workers and a revolution that results in the future. But one of the elements of Metropolis is a robot created by a mad scientist. And Lucas always loved this robot, but it was a female robot, very sleek, very beautifully designed. And when it came time to create C-3PO for Star Wars, Lucas reached back into the films that he loved and told his design folks, I want C-3PO to be based on the Fritz Lang robot from 1927, but obviously not be the same. I want it to be humanoid, but to have that kind of futuristic, beautiful, gleaming quality.
You know, this Smithsonian exhibition, I know it's been touring around the U.S. for the past 3 years, so this is the final stop. The Travel Channel put it on its list of 10 art exhibits worth traveling for in 2018. Elliot, why was Detroit and the DIA a good fit for this exhibition as you landed it?
Since this building went up in 1927, Cynthia, when it first opened its doors, the theater where we run films now every weekend and where so many other kinds of events take place, that theater was equipped for film from 1927, from opening day, and had a projection booth in it, as it still does. We showed film as an art form right from the very beginning, actually predating the Museum of Modern Art in New York by about 3 months, I think. So in some ways, we're the first North American museum to take cinema really seriously as one of the arts, and we still do. So it only makes sense. We look at and examine cinema as an art form, and being an art form that's different from the others, it's not just a mashup of sculpture and painting. It is something unique. It is something wholly other. And our director, Salvador Salvador, in order to sort of make a statement about that, saw that the really joyous and informative, open qualities of this exhibition would be a perfect way to introduce the cinema into the regular galleries here at the DIA and to bring in audiences who may never have visited the museum. And in fact, the exhibition makes connections between many of the other arts that we have and specific works that we have at the DIA. Darth Vader's helmet is clearly based on a samurai helmet design, and we have one in our collection. So there are connections between films, there are connections between works of art, but most of all, we want to establish a connection with the people who may feel that this institution is not for them and point out to them quite simply that it's just the contrary. It's for everyone.
So we've got more than 60 original costumes, 150 plus pieces of artwork and videos and sketches that tell the story behind the movies, but you're also tying in film screenings as well?
Yes. During the summer, beginning in June, we're going to be having on most days that we're open at 3 p.m., films that are free with museum admission, kind of the films that inspired in some way or another Star Wars. Some of those specifically described by Lucas as inspirations for certain aspects of Star Wars. For example, a Japanese film by Akira Kurosawa called The Hidden Fortress, which has virtually the same plot and the same major characters as Star Wars. It was made in the 1950s. But also a lot of adventure films. I mean, after all, Star Wars is kind of a swashbuckler set in space. And there are Earthbound swashbucklers that inspired Lucas also, films like The Adventures of Robin Hood and The Seahawk with Errol Flynn. And, of course, lots of science fiction from the 1950s and the early 1960s, movies like Journey to the Center of the Earth and This Island Earth, Creature from the Black Lagoon, you name it. We have more than 40-plus films that we're going to be running during June, July, and August for people to just drop in on when they come to see the Star Wars exhibition.
Well, Star Wars and the Power of Costume runs now through September 30th at the DIA, and you can get all the information and tickets by going to DIA.org. One final question, Elliot. You were there the day the first Star Wars movie opened. You were at the Americana Cinema in 1977. How'd you feel when the first crate got opened and you, like, beheld Chewbacca?
I didn't think this would happen to me, honestly, because I've been working with movies and meeting movie people, and I even had a bit part in an actual Hollywood film and considered myself kind of jaded. But when they opened the crate for R2-D2, I have to confess that even though I've never been all that sentimental about the character, I teared up. And I thought, you know, I love movies, and it became a very emotional moment for me. And I was really, really happy at that moment that we were doing this exhibition and that I got to be a part of it, to have, I'm hoping, other movie lovers experience that same kind of connection and that same kind of emotion.
Elliot Wilhelm with the DIA. May the Force be with you. Thank you.
And you as well, Cynthia. Thanks.